You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave White, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and More here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Time for our player spotlight. Always fun to catch up with this guy. You know him, you love him from his days at the University of Washington. Now a member of your Seattle Seahawks, of course. Ben Berkervin is with us. Ben, how are you, man?
I'm doing real good. How about y'all?
We're good. I gotta ask you what this season has been like, because obviously, I mean, you haven't been in the league a long time, but you're not a rookie at this point. What has it been like, just going through the whole COVID thing, the no fans thing? Everything is so different from what a normal season would otherwise look like, and I'm always interested to hear everybody's take on it. How is it that much different to you, or is it all similar? Once you get onto the field, it feels normal.
You know, I think the biggest difference is obviously, I think the off season and camp, you know, the changes that were made there. But I think in terms of, you know, our day to day here, it's really pretty similar. Obviously, there's been some meetings and things like that have become virtual, but we're still practicing. And then obviously, you know, when it comes down to the game, it's maybe a little bit weird without the fans when we first run out there. But once the actual game starts, there's really not that much difference. It's just football at the end of the day. So it's definitely weird to, you know, not have the 12s there. And it's a bummer. You know, you'd love to hear them screaming. You know, we would have loved to have them on that fourth and goal against the Patriots. But at the end of the day, you know, it's football and we all got to adapt. So I think that it's worked out a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Hey, Ben, you've been a huge factor on special teams. I'm just wondering what it was like for the players when you found out before the first game that Brian Schneider wouldn't be your coach anymore. He was stepping down and that Larry Izzo was taking over.
Yeah, you know, definitely, you know, tough thing. I mean, obviously, Schneider's been a guy who's been here for a really long time. We all love him, and he's done a great job for us. And so it was definitely, you know, a shock to have that happen, you know, the week of the first game. But, you know, Iz was here with us last year, and he's a great coach. He's been a head coordinator before, so it was a really smooth transition. And I think we've been playing real good on team so far, so I think it's worked out as smoothly as it could.
Is there much of a difference in coaching philosophy when we're talking about special teams when you go from Schneider to Izzo? Is he showing you something completely different, or are there different rules to the way you play, or is it pretty much the same game plan?
I mean, it's pretty similar. Obviously, you know, they each have their own little intricacies and little things, but at the end of the day, you know, it's a very similar system. And like I said, I mean, Iz was with us all year last year and was, you know, collaborating. It's not like it was just Snides last year, so Iz did a lot last year too. And so I think that, you know, in terms of the switchover, it really just felt like, you know, one of the coaches was just putting a little bit more than he had been doing. And so it's worked out really well. And there are little philosophy things and things like that are different between, you know, the two guys. But I think that it's been as smooth as it could be, like I said, and it's worked out well.
Are you on the punt coverage team?
Yeah, I am.
What's it like working with Michael Dixon? I mean, does it just it just depends on where you are on the field, whether he's going to try and get it to bite inside the 5-yard line or the direction he's going. How does that all work?
I mean, with Mike, we know that, you know, almost anywhere we are on the field, I kind of expect the ball to end up inside the 20 at the end of the play. I mean, he's amazing at what he does. I mean, last week, I think he had 3 inside the 20, and then we had 2 that were almost on the 1-yard line that just got a little bit of a bad roll. But it seems like every time he hits the ball, it goes where he wants it to go and where it's supposed to go, and it makes it a whole lot easier for us to cover kicks when we have a guy like that kicking the ball.
You're obviously huge on special teams, but you're a defensive player, you're a linebacker. You've had a chance to watch this defense through 3 games, and it's not what I think most people want to see, including the defense. What if you could put your finger on what the problems are? Is it guys just missing assignments? Is it just attention to detail? What do you think has happened defensively in these 3 games?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a mix of things. I think we're stopping the run at a really, really high level, which is making these games turn into shootouts a little bit, especially with the way that Russ and the offense have been scoring. So I think that inflates the stats some. Obviously, when you see all of a sudden quarterbacks throwing the ball, you know, 55 times a game instead of 30, but there's definitely just details here and there that we need to clean up, and we've got to understand that this is the way that the games are going to go with the way our offense is playing right now. As teams are going to have to throw the ball, and we have to be able to, you know, react and stop that.
Hey, Ben, you clearly have some really good players ahead of you, like K.J. Wright, Bobby Wagner, and then they drafted Jordan Brooks. You're in your second year now, and you were Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. I'm just wondering how it's going with the patience level with Ben Berkervin.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I mean, the nature of the game is, you know, if I was somewhere else, maybe I'd feel different. But, I mean, with Bobby and K.J. and the way they're playing, the way they have played, I mean, it's not something where, you know, you expect to jump the line at them. I mean, they're great players, and they still are. And so I think it's just looking at it as a learning opportunity, and the amount that I can and pick up from playing with these guys for as long as they're here is going to be something that will be invaluable for my entire career. So I think it's – I understand that there's a lot more than just 1 or 2 years of football hopefully ahead of me and getting as much as I can out of these times right now.
Hey, Ben, I want you to settle a debate for us here. We were debating yesterday the idea of a trap game. People are looking at this Miami game coming up saying, it's a trap game, as if somehow you're going to look at them as less than, and hey, we can breeze past these guys and focus on the real opponents. I think it's nonsense. It's obviously a popular thing to say. As a guy that's played at a high level in college and obviously at the highest level in the NFL, what are your thoughts on trap games? Do they exist?
I think they only exist if you let them exist, and I think it kind of comes down to the philosophy and the culture of the team, and I think that the way we look at things here and the way that we approach each game makes it hard for a trap game to be a thing, because each game we look at its own thing. There's no overarching, well, we got to look down the road to bigger games or anything like that. It's every single game is a championship week for us, so that preparation is no different playing them as it would be any other team.
Yeah, but don't you think, Ben, when you were back in college, if you were playing Portland State the week that you were before you were playing the Apple Cup against the Cougs, that it might be, you know, a letdown spot there, that Portland State game?
I mean, Portland State probably gave us more trouble than the Cougs ever did, so probably not.
Oh, you're not letting me down, Ben. You're not letting me down. You know, have you noticed, though, that there's a new sheriff in town?
Yeah.
There's a new sheriff in town, Nick Rolovich, over there in Pullman with the run and shoot, so they won't have that predictable air raid anymore?
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
He's giving you nothing, Jim. He's not playing your game.
Hey, Ben, did you know that Jimmy Lake is 0-0 as a head coach in the Apple Cup?
Yeah, but he sure coached a lot of defenses that won Apple Cups.
Oh,
okay.
All right.
Yeah, you're right. And, Ben, you get the last word on that because we haven't won since 2012. But did you happen to see the Mississippi State upset of LSU this weekend? Okay, did it occur to you, like, if I'm sitting there and I'm watching Mississippi State going up and down the field, KJ Costello having just a huge day, over 600 yards, did LSU not pull out the tapes of the Apple Cup to see what you guys were doing?
It must be. I don't know what other teams do when they decide to play a leech offense. But, yeah, you should definitely, if I was telling coaches what to do, I'd say pull out some old Apple Cup takes and watch Peter Kukowski and Jimmy Lake defense, and you'll figure out how to stop it.
What do you think about the season starting? Initially, it wasn't going to happen. Now we're going to get an abbreviated season. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, you know, I'm happy for my friends that are there. I mean, I know just talking to the guys that were there, how frustrating it was to feel like, especially watching as the rest of the country, you know, started playing ball and all the things that were happening, and the Pac-12 being the last one, there's just a lot of frustration and disappointment for guys feeling like, you know, am I going to lose my senior year? What's going to happen? So I'm happy that they're going to get to play some kind of ball, and hopefully they're going to have, you know, a good year.
I've only got two more things for you, and I won't bug you about the Apple Cup anymore. But do you and Russell Wilson ever talk about getting the undersized thing? Like Russell Wilson for years and years, boy, he's too small, too short to play quarterback or whatever, and we know differently. And then you've always been the undersized linebacker. That's what's holding Ben Burkervin back. Do you guys ever talk about that together?
No, I've never really talked to him about that. I think it might be a little bit too late in his career for that undersized thing to really stick to him anymore. He's done a little too much.
And you seem like you'd be a good guy to ask this question, too. What's your biggest pet peeve?
My biggest pet peeve?
Yeah, something that really bothers you. Like, for me, it's litter. I can't stand litter. Bugs me.
I think probably just I don't like dishonesty. Anything like that. I don't like anything like any shady stuff like that bothers me.
Fair enough.
There you go, Jim. I thought you were going to ask him about his favorite movie.
No, I wasn't going to do that because the last time Dave Wyman asked you that question, Ben, you said you hated that question.
Anything else?
Okay, anything else? What's the worst movie you've ever seen?
The worst movie I've ever seen? Oh, man, there's a lot of really, really bad movies. God, let me think. What's really bad I've seen recently? Can't think of anything recently, but I remember there was a movie when I was in high school called Stan Helsing that was one of the worst movies I ever saw.
What is it? Have you seen anything recently that you really liked? Maybe not a favorite, but just any recent releases?
Not really. I mean, because obviously, like, there hasn't been any new movies or anything like coming out, so I haven't really been as long on my movie game because there's nothing new to go see.
Are you big into the Marvel movie, the superhero movies? Are you big into those or no?
Yeah, they're solid. I mean, I'm not like a crazy fan or anything like that, but I've watched them all.
How about on the positive side? Everybody's binge watching these different Netflix series. What's been your favorite?
Ooh, man, there's a lot of good stuff on Netflix. I really like the show Afterlife, the Ricky Gervais show.
Oh, that is so good. That is so good.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite right now.
That's quality. That's a good call. Let's end on a high note there. That's a good call. Hey, Ben, we always appreciate you taking time and setting Jim straight when it comes to the Coon UW matchup. That's always fun to listen to.
I lose that debate every time.
And yet you continue to try to debate him on it. I don't know why you do. But
I know. Well, Ben knows it would have been a different outcome if there hadn't been sleet on the field there.
Isn't that amazing? In Washington State, they got a problem with snow. It's weird.
Okay. Let him have it. He needs something.
Hey, you're going to see Miles Gaskin this weekend. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be really good to see Miles. I'm excited to see him. I'll see him in a little bit.
Hey, Ben, we appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for taking time. We wish you the best this weekend, and hopefully we catch up soon.
Awesome. Good talking to you guys. Thanks so much.
There you go. Ben Burke-Hervin of your Seattle Seahawks has got him to talk movies a little bit, Dave.
Why was it okay to ask what his favorite series is?
Because he said you can ask anything else.
All right.
Yeah, I remember that.
I was gonna, the next time we talked to him, I was gonna go, hey Ben, if you were to have to go into outer space for 1 year and you could only take one movie with you to watch, what would it be?
There you go.
Just rephrase the question.
Creative way of asking about his favorite movie.
I don't think I could have slipped it past him.
No. Yeah. I think that's what you were doing with the pet peeve thing, right, Jim? You were hoping he was going to say people asking him about his favorite movie.
I didn't. I just was fishing. I was fishing during the interview there.
And I thought you were setting him up to see if he would say that.
No, I don't. No, I don't set up people like that.
No, you're not that calculated.
No, I don't do that. And the reason we ask movie questions at Ben Burke-Hervin is that he was like a film and movie major there at Washington.
Right. And Dave had asked him about that one time when we interviewed him, and he said, I hate that question. It's my least favorite question when people ask, what's my favorite movie?
Yeah. But, you know, what about worst movie? And then you did that, and so I wonder why he didn't respond that way. But the worst movie I've ever seen, it was an Eddie Murphy movie. That was really bad. Was it Boomerang?
That's the one with Steve Martin, right?
Maybe. I walked out.
Really?
Yeah. But the one I sat through was in college. It was called King Solomon's Mines. It was Richard Chamberlain, and Sharon Stone was in it, which I didn't remember. But I remember they put them in like this tribe somewhere, put them in like a big pot, like they were going to cook them. And mm-hmm. then there were vegetables. They added vegetables in there.
Like,
and then
it's a human soup?
Yeah, and the vegetables were clearly plastic because they were all floating on the top. And I remember just calling that out and going, whoa, my God, what? Vegetables don't float? Yeah, so that was the worst movie I think I've ever seen. But I sat through the whole thing.
Did you?
I was just hoping it was going to get better.
You know when I just saw that I didn't even know existed and I was excited? You saw The Big Lebowski, right?
Yeah.
You remember John Turturro's character, Jesus?
No.
The bowler, he was the eccentric bowler.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and he was there's a movie out that came out this year called Jesus Rolls. And all of a sudden it was on Showtime, and it's produced by him and written by him, and he's playing that character,
John Turturro.
Yeah. And it is awful. Yeah. It is horrifically bad. And I was like, I couldn't even get through it. I'm like, I got to turn this. And I love Turturro. I love that character. I love The Big Lebowski. But what a pile.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, was that bad.
Did you feel like you got ripped off? There's
Had
time
I gone
that
to a theater, I would have felt that way. Yeah. I would have left. It was insufferably bad.
Do you think we're ever going to go back to theaters again?
Sure. Well, some of them are open right now.
Are they?
At limited capacity in some areas of the country. So
I like the ones where you can get food and a big chair. I don't think I'll ever go back into a theater.
You can recline the chair.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've got some that have like little pods almost. You're like encased in a little, your own little pod.
There. I have to say that's when I'm really a jerk, is when I'm in a theater and somebody's like with their, you know, candy or a wrapper or anything. I'll always turn and, you know,
give
look at
eye.
Them and, yeah. Can you give me a break with that? Some people might argue that that's the only time I'm a jerk.
Is in a movie theater.
The only time?
There might be an argument there that that's not the only time, Jim. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see if he gets on the field. I really want to see Burke Irvin play because he got in the Carolina game last year. Was the one time I remember that he was out there. And it looked like people weren't lined up right. And there was, you know, Cody was out there. He was out there. I think Bobby and KJ both were out for some reason. And but, you know, you come back your second year, you feel a lot better. And he's obviously a highly intelligent guy, really smart football player, too. So, and those two don't always go hand in hand. Because I was around some really highly intelligent guys at Stanford that didn't have, you know, like a feel for the game and didn't have, you know, the common sense that goes, you know, that you need to play.
Yeah. Quickly, the 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. Can he play linebacker at this level? Could he be a starting linebacker in this league?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we haven't seen it, but, I mean, you're talking about because of his size and everything?
Yeah, just I mean, we talked about a couple of guys. You brought up Sam Mills. I brought up London Fletcher, guys who were, I mean, 5'9". I think London Fletcher was 5'9" as well.
Yeah.
He was really small. He was a fire hydrant.
Yeah.
But played really well. Who was the guy from the Dolphins that was related to Jason Taylor's sisters?
Oh, Zach Thomas. Thomas, yeah.
Was he Zach like 5'10"?
Yep. Yeah. Remember Dak Gwen? Dat Wen?
Yeah, from the Cowboys.
The Cowboys.
Yeah.
Yep, him also. So, yeah, there's been a number of, you know, and I mentioned, of course, Sam Mills. So, and Grady Jarrett's dad, whose name was Jesse Tuggle. Mm-hmm. Jesse Tuggle was, you know, one of those smaller guys, too. So, yeah, he can absolutely play.
By the way, people are checking in with Worst Movie. They said it was Bowfinger, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Somebody else said Pluto Nash, which was another Eddie Murphy movie that was not good. Somebody else said Cabin Boy is the all-time worst.
Oh, yeah. Isn't Letterman in that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had the guy. Who was that actor that always came on Letterman's show?
Chris. What is his name? He was in
The Guy Under the Stairs.
I'm blanking on his last name. Somebody else.
Yeah, he was under the stands.
Yeah. By the way, somebody said, hey, Dave, I'm wearing the same design T-shirt. You are. My shirt is blue. Ames Brothers created them. I get comments all the time. Good comments. That's from Julie. So that she's watching on the stream.
Well, thanks, Julie. I don't want to get the word out there because there's the Ames Brothers shirts that I love. They're the most comfortable shirts. And they have cool designs and stuff, but like a lot of them you can't get. I mean, they're running out. It's high demand.
So you want to keep this on the
It's the best T-shirt company. Ames Brothers, best T-shirt company.
Well, now you're letting it out.
Yeah, I know, but that's okay.
Chris Elliott, that's who it is. Chris Elliott.
Yeah, that's
there
right.
There you go. Another saying Sharknado is horrible. I think Sharknado is supposed to be horrible.
Yeah, they.
I don't think there's any intent of, hey, this is going to be a quality film. It's supposed to be campy and cheesy and ironic and just stupid. Jim, any thought? Jim, you're not a movie guy either, huh? You don't watch TV shows or movies?
No, I'm kind of distracted because I'm looking at the Seahawks injury report. Maura sent us a text saying how long it is, and it is one of the longer ones I've seen. You want me to go through it here real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, Dwayne Brown with a knee. Now, we're not really that concerned about him because it's probably a veteran day off, even though it doesn't say that. He didn't play today, practice today. The others that did not practice, Benson Mayoa, Puna Ford, Jamal Adams, all with groin injuries. Quentin Dunbar and Jordan Brooks with knee injuries. Limited participants, Chris Carson, Will Disley, Shaquille Griffin with a shoulder. We know about Disley's Achilles and Carson's knee. Nico Thorpe with a hip, Lano Hill with a back. Carlos Hyde with a shoulder. Damian Lewis with his ankle. Posick with ankle knee. Mike Iupati with a knee. And that's it. I shouldn't say that's it. That's a long list there. But it's still only Wednesday, and we'll see the rest of the week and hear from Pete probably on Friday as to who's going to play and who won't.
Good news on Lewis and Posick, though, because that's limited participation. So they're at least out there doing something. So, because, you know, with Damian Lewis, I thought, wow, that was a, you know, he was down on the ground for a while. So I was worried about that one, but he was actually able to go through.
How did he get? Was it Iupati roll up on him, or who? I can't remember how he got hurt. Didn't Iupati landed on somebody?
Was it Dwayne?
That was the week before against the Patriots. Oh, I thought for sure that just did Dwayne Brown's knee in. But he was able to come back a little bit after that. And Jamarco Jones went in there and filled in at guard last week. He filled in for Dwayne Brown at tackle. And I think, you know, I hope there's not any injuries. But I do. I like Jamarco Jones. I think he's a really valuable player on this team.
All right. Coming up, Bobby Wagner and Pete Carroll spoke with the media today, it was, about what needs to happen to clean up the defensive play. We're going to let you hear what they had to say. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. You can download it for free. Take us with you wherever you go. You got the app. You can listen to the show live, listen to podcasts, text, watch video, all that good stuff from the app. As we were just spending the whole break there talking about the worst movies ever.
Eddie Murphy movies. Some of them have been bad. Somebody texted in. You said that anything Eddie Murphy makes is bad.
Somebody said every one of his movies are awful. I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Coming to America was fantastic. And then the Beverly Hills Cop. I liked Nutty Professor.
Yeah, 48 Hours is great. He's got a lot of great movies. Yeah. He had a good run. And then he made a bunch of duds. But, you know, that's the same for Will Ferrell. Well, he had a ton of good movies and then he's been striking out for a couple of years.
Yeah. But
Jim's not in on any of this, huh?
No, I was just thinking about the Eddie Murphy movie. Which one was they took over as the stock guys, the stock market?
And Trading Places.
Places.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That's a great movie. All right, Jim. Anything else there?
No, that's all I have to contribute.
The movie where they take over the stock market.
Yeah. Yes. It's so funny. I just don't remember scenes in movies like you guys do. It's not like I don't watch movies. I watch movies, but...
Okay. Yeah. But you don't watch Seinfeld, you don't watch TV shows.
This morning I woke up and my alarm went off and I thought about, why volume knob? Why volume knob? Remember the runner?
Jim's going,
Baptiste was his name, I think. Jean-Paul.
Jean-Paul, yeah.
Yeah, he overslept for the marathon.
That's when Jerry was taking all those precautions to wake him in the hot tub in Kramer's apartment, shorted out the electricity.
That's right.
So there you go. Jim, again, is just going, I don't know what you're talking about, so we'll move on.
I'm trying to look up the name of the movie that I just saw the other night so I could, you know, be a further contributor here.
Oh, you saw a movie that was good and you don't know the name?
It wasn't good. It was Orange something.
Clockwork Orange?
Clockwork Orange, yeah.
No, it wasn't Classic. It was about some...
Little Droogies?
Yeah.
Mick Jagger was in it.
Orange something with Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. We'll figure
it out. The Burnt Orange Heresy.
I've never heard of it.
Never heard of it.
Is it new or old? What is it?
2019. It came out last year. Yeah, it had a bad ending, but a drama thriller.
Never heard of it.
My wife, when she starts a movie, she has to finish it no matter what, and I'll walk away.
Yeah.
I got no problem walking away.
I'll try to power through most of the time, but some of them just are begging you to leave. All right, let's get into what's going on with this Hawks defense. You had Bobby Wagner speaking with the media today. Here he is saying they just have to lock it down on defense.
We just got to lock in on the little details, lock in on the, some of the plays towards the end of the game. We get up and, you know, we're up by 15 points or whatever. And you know, obviously the situation changes and teams are going to have to throw the ball to kind of get back into the game. And so we just have to do a better job of recognizing those situations and playing them better.
Little details, is that what's going on? Is it little details being missed? Is it about teams getting down? Because, again, I'll point to the first game. It was 14-12 at the half, and the Falcons had put up 240 yards on them at the half. So it wasn't about, they have to catch up now and throw it all over the place.
I'll say this. They're playing the perimeter better, I believe, in the run game. In the run game, they're number two.
Yeah.
And I'm loving that. That's great. I mean, and then the other day, it was just guys getting beat individually a couple of times. The thing I worry about is just the middle of the field and those, you know, deep crossers and some of the, you know, 18, 19-yard throws. You know, those are the ones that it seems like that are killing them, you know, and especially the deep crossing pattern. I mean, think about it, you know, the other day, was it Gallup that had one and then – You know, you saw Amari Cooper get one, and then in the New England game, of course, there was the Edelman one. So, you know, that's something I feel like is a problem. But, you know, they've got to address that. And look, it's not talent. I mean, look, this is a defense. I don't think that you might say, well, they don't have that explosive pass rusher. You know, yeah, okay. I mean, Benson Mayoa has shown that he could be pretty good, but and, you know, you got Jaron Reed, but, you know, as far as, like, talent goes, I mean, the injuries have killed him.
Right.
No question. So.
Well, and here he is before you jump in, we'll let Bobby comment on whether injuries on the back end have impacted their communication.
I don't think it made it challenging because I think, you know, you always, you know, as the signal caller, you're constantly communicating. I think it's just, you know, like over the years you create certain nonverbal communications, or you get used to working with a certain person, and you guys might play a certain play one way, and then somebody comes in and you have to either explain how you guys are playing that play or adjust. And so sometimes that happens in the game and you're trying to adjust on the fly, and you know, we can the whole thing, just as far as the pass game, we just got to do better.
I would think, Jim, it's easier now than it's ever been because you don't have crowd to shout over. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, I suppose. I was just jotting down some notes here. You know, Bobby, you know, I think after the game said, we just got to get off the field. And then today, we got to lock it up. And then following up with, we got to do better. And, yeah, I'm sure before he goes up there in front of the reporters and, you know, takes the podium, that he's like, oh, man, I got to say something here. But I just – and then we talk about injuries, and that's a valid excuse. But even when they were healthy, they weren't that good. And I got to be honest. Well, I always am. But it's really been going on for 2+ years where the defense hasn't been good. So, you know, you could probably go back 10 games last year, pick out a game when Bobby Wagner was talked to by media, we got to lock it up, we got to do better. Well, when is it going to get better, Bobby? You know, and you're making $18 million, Bobby. You're the quarterback of that defense. Why isn't it better than it is? So, you know, not to be harsh, but he's, you know, bang for your buck. Bobby Wagner's not giving it to you, as far as I'm
concerned.
You don't
think he's having,
I mean, we talk about, I mean, he had a big role on Cam Newton, you know, stopping and preserving that victory. But as far as $18 million, I'm not seeing it. I don't know. Maybe everybody else is. I was looking at his stats today. So he's got 26 tackles, which, okay, great. 3 passes defensed, 1 tackle for loss, 3 quarterback hits. All right, but have you watched the games and thought, man, Wagner's really been a standout this year? And I feel like I'm coming down on him like I did Clowney, but part of that is that when you're a superstar and you're making that kind of money and you're playing on a defense that's as bad as this one, you're probably not having a good year either. So, anyway, that's where I am with Wagner, and maybe I'm wrong about him. I often am, but I just think he could do more.
I don't think you're going to get that pool game with him now.
As if he listens to this show. You think he's driving home going, yeah, I think I'll tune into 710 and see what those yahoos have to say today.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Those guys probably put, you know, like, I know I upgraded my sound system when I was an NFL player, and you put $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 into upgrading your sound system in your car so you can listen to sports talk radio? Probably not.
No, I don't think so.
Probably not. But, you know, I'll say this, and it is quieter. So a couple of things, the shift that he, you know, called out on that on the safety. I did that on Football 101, which is on 710sports.com. Bob.
Where?
710sports.com. But anyway, yeah, I mean, there's no crowd noise, so you don't have to reach up and slap the guy on the hind parts and get him to move over. They shifted him over, and that's one of the things that made that play. He put those guys in the right position. And then, you know, same thing with slatting him against the Patriots. But yeah, the thing is, like, remember 2017 where he had that game where it was like an interception return, 2 quarterback hits, a tackle for a loss, or was that 18? That might have been 2018.
I thought it was 18, but I
the mean, San Francisco game?
Yeah, it was.
Toward the end of the year?
18. Yeah, I mean, and he hasn't had that kind of game yet, but, you know, he's, You know, I don't know if he's worth $18 million. I'd have to look at, you know, what are other linebackers doing that are getting paid that much. And I think you expect a lot from him. Mm. But yeah, I mean, he's good leader. And the other thing is, I'm reticent. I feel like I'll criticize offensive plays, but not defensive plays, because I don't know what their rules are. And I say this to you all the time, Bob, when I'm looking at stuff, I'm like, look, I don't know if he's supposed to jump this guy or he's supposed to continue to get depth. I don't know if, you know, one side is man, the other side's zone. Sometimes when there's a crosser that comes through, if, you know, remember it used to be if there's the second guy through, you man up.
Right.
You know, so there's all kinds of things that I'm reticent to say. But certainly, like you said, they've got to tighten things up. I mean, that's now 64 10-yard plays.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. It's 27% of their snaps on defense. Geez.
Did you see what Pete had to say today? Sometimes it looks like we haven't been practicing.
Well, here's a cut. Well, I don't know if it's in this cut, but Pete Carroll saying we have to clean up the sloppiness that comes from newness and lack of practice.
Well, we have to quit making the errors that come from the newness and the guys, you know, not being out there together. And you know, it's been sloppy at times. And the communication has not been, you know, as effective as it needs to be. We're trying, and we're working at it, and the principles are there and all that. But we've had a few breakdowns that, you know, we give a regular routine play access to the end zone, you know, this is wrong. Getting beat over the top is a different story, but when the plays come across the field and we're in zone and they make touchdowns, that's not supposed to ever happen. So we have to be better, try to recapture the emphasis.
So is that what he's talking about, the crossing? Because he's saying beating over the top is one thing, but – the middle, getting to the end zone is a different thing.
That's what I would think. Yeah, and you know the other thing is they just do things differently. You know, from what I'm used to. I'm from the olden days. You know, so I mean, look, when a guard comes out, I mean, it used to be if a guard comes to block you, you're going to try to close that distance faster than him, and you're going to try to come up and just splatter the guard as hard as you can. And they're more catching blockers and sort of giving ground and then staying alive. And, you know, that has to be how they're taught because that's what they're doing. So, maybe that's more effective for them. I mean, I know this, you want to hit the running back, not the guard.
Right.
I was a guard hitter.
Yeah. you just wanted to hit anybody.
But it's just different, you know, it's just different the way that they do it. And so, you know, as far as what they're doing, I'm always a little bit – I give defenses a little bit of a break, and certainly the players, because, like I said, I'm not in the meeting. I don't know what the rules are. Yeah. I'll rip the offensive guys all day long.
Yeah. You'll let those guys have
it. That's right.
All right, coming up, which NFC West team is the biggest threat to the Seahawks? Has it changed from the beginning of the season? We'll talk about it next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Who's the biggest threat in the NFC West to the Seahawks? Before the season, I thought it'd be San Francisco, Seattle battling for 1 and 2. Thought the Cardinals would be third and the Rams would be last. But I thought the Rams would be potentially a winning team.
I think it's the Rams still.
I've completely reversed it. I mean, it's three games, so keep that in mind. But, you know, you just look at who they are and who they've beaten. Man, I think the Rams are their biggest competition. I mean, the 49ers are dealing with a boatload of injuries. We'll see what they look like when they get healthy. Cardinals may not quite be there yet. I still think they're formidable, but if we're just looking at the most challenging team right now in this division for the Seahawks, I think it's the Rams, and I had them in last.
Well, here's what's disturbing to me, or I should say concerning, is the Niners with all of these injuries. Now, I know that the two New York teams are bad, but they're still pro football teams.
Right.
And these guys are having tons of injuries, the Niners are. They don't have Bosa. They don't have Thomas. They don't have their quarterback, Garoppolo. Running back got hurt, right? Was it Coleman, Tevin Coleman? Mm-hmm. Anyway, 36-9, they beat the Giants. And then
the backup quarterback.
And they had similar with the Jets, you know, that type of score, and they beat them 31-13. So, I mean, you talk about hardly giving up any points in those two games. And, you know, they gave up 24 against the Cardinals and lost. But still, I just it bothers me that. And they also stayed out on the East Coast. And as John said, they lost their MRI machine or something like that.
Yeah.
And all the things that went on, they stayed back there. And they're still able to get that done. So that's concerning. And, you know, Garoppolo will be back at some point, but they're still really well coached.
Yeah, and Kittle practiced. I think Debo Samuel is coming back. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Jerick McKinley or McKinson or whoever the running back is that they have now that's like the, you know, wasn't the guy going in. You know, he's having I mean, because they have a good running game. So McKinnon, I think they're still going to be good. I mean, just because they had these injuries. And first of all, the Seahawks are going through a similar thing right now. And hopefully this is just a phase. But yeah, I still think until you can shut down that Ram offense, you know, that they're a huge threat right up there with the 49ers.
Yeah, well, you look at it, and I was with you, Bob, on thinking the Rams were going to finish last in the NFC West this year. But after seeing their first three games, it's hard not to be impressed with them because they should have won that game at Buffalo. They were down to, well, I don't know. I shouldn't say that they should have won, but I mean, it was an amazing comeback they had. They were down 28-3 and they took the lead. And then Josh Allen took his team down the field and ended up beating them there at the end. But what a great comeback they had. And Buffalo's a quality team. I mean, they're one of the best teams in the AFC. And to go in there to Buffalo and then almost beat them the way they did. So, yeah, I've changed my mind on the Rams. I thought Arizona would be unbeaten going into the game against Seattle on October 25th, but they lost to the Lions.
Yeah, and they beat Washington San Francisco.
Whenever a coach is on the hot seat, I never think that their team is going to win because you're on a hot seat for a reason. And then Matt Patricia going in there with his Detroit Lions and beating Arizona, being on the uptick the way they are, the Cardinals, I that really surprised me. And then, as Dave pointed out, okay, yeah, the Giants and Jets aren't that great, but all the injuries, you had to stay back there on the East Coast, and you won those games, and now you're coming back a little bit with Kittle and Debo Samuel. So it makes it even more important to win these out of division games because, you know, once you get in the division and you start playing those games, you're going to be beating each other up. And so your record's going to suffer as a result. So you got to beat the Miamis of the world for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the numbers that Mora put down on the sheet for us. The Rams are 18th in overall defense, which isn't great. But the Seahawks are last in overall defense.
So basically, we can't criticize anybody else's defense.
Pretty much, yeah. If we're gonna,
you take 18th right now.
That would be a big improvement. I mean, let's be honest. 18th, I'll take it. I think if you've got the 18th ranked defense with the way this offense is playing, you feel like a legit Super Bowl contender, and you feel good about your chances. Right now, you feel really good about that's a Super Bowl offense, but you feel like if they don't make it, talking about the Seahawks, or if they come up short, whatever, it's going to be because of the defense. Because that's a liability right now until they get it fixed, until they tighten it up or whatever Bobby said. Let's you know, little adjustments, whatever it is. Until that happens, I mean, you're giving up almost 500 yards a game. I think it's what did we say yesterday? They're averaging 497 a game. My goodness.
Well, it's definitely concerning. And again, you know, there's some like historic things here. I mean, 500 yards in consecutive or, you know, that high of yardage. It's not 500, but very close. I mean, I remember when the Saints were really, really bad that one year. They were giving up like 440. So 497. The other thing is, you know, the Cam Newton thing. He throws for 397, which is his highest total since he was a rookie, his first 2 years. The Atlanta receivers, three guys getting nine catches, and I didn't even know this was an NFL record until I watched the Cowboy game because we're getting ready for the Cowboys. Nine guys over 100 yards had never been done in the NFL, and that was the three receivers, Gage and Ridley
and Julio Jones.
Julio. So, yeah, it's concerning. It definitely is. So, I mean, I don't think it's they're going to go and be the Indianapolis Colts all of a sudden, but it's got to, you know, maybe keep it under four.
And what do we take away from a game, Jim, against the Dolphins and or the Minnesota Vikings? Let's assume that the numbers look decidedly better, but are we going to – you kind of have to qualify it a bit, right? You're not talking about the elite of the NFL in those two teams right now.
So is it going to be fool's gold, or are we going to go, hey, they've fixed what's wrong? Look at what they did against the Dolphins. Look what they did against the Vikings. And that's assuming that they do step up in those games.
Well, I hadn't even thought of that, but I guess you make a valid point there, Bob. But, no, you just want to see some sort of improvement. Like Dave is saying, under 400 yards instead of the 500. And don't let a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick go off. I think most of us like him and get a kick out of him and his beard and everything he's got going on. But this is a capable guy. I know he's been a journeyman, but he's been one of the better backups. And we know that he's just a placeholder for Tua, and they're not getting to Tua just yet. But
really quick, because I know we got a break. I'm sorry to cut you off, Jim, because I know we got to go. But Ryan Fitzpatrick has started for one quarter of the NFL.
One quarter of the teams?
Eight different teams. And also, the other day when he beat the Jaguars, he's beaten the Jaguars six times with six different teams.
Wow.
So, I mean, this guy, you know, he's a Harvard guy. And so, like, to your point, Jim, I mean, look, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you didn't look at the beginning of the year and go, well, that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's been around for a long time. He's a smart guy.
He's capable.
Well, he's at 71% on the year. Now, four touchdowns, three interceptions, but he threw for 328 against the Bills, and the Bills have to have a better defense than the Seahawks.
Well, they do, because the Seahawks are last. So any team we're talking about has a better defense, statistically speaking, than the Seahawks do right now. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk more football with a professor, John Clayton, who will join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
We did a lot of learning today. I'm certain of it. I'm certain that we learned a lot. Right, Maura?
Oh, as always.
What did we learn today?
First up, we learned from Jim, no long snapper, no problem.
I was just flashing on something crazy. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
No. Okay, go to break, Bob.
No. Okay.
What is it, Jim? No, if you didn't have a long snapper and you just didn't go in shotgun, you just took the center snap like in the old days, you no shotgun, no punts, no field goals. I think that'd be, I wonder how that a game like that would work out.
I'm guessing not well.
Maybe.
Right? If you, again, if time's running out, you work your way down the field into field goal range, but there's not enough time to get in the end zone. I mean, I guess you just, are forced to throw one up there and hope that somebody comes down with it in the end zone because you don't have a long snapper.
I wonder how it would change the play calling, because you wouldn't want to get yourself into a fourth and long. You'd want to have fourth and manageable because you can't punt and you got to go for it. And you're going for two every time, too.
Well, I think the punting part of it, I would think they would be able to figure that out, because the timing isn't so close that, you know, you're going to get a punt blocked necessarily. Whereas, you know, we saw Trey Flowers come off the edge and block an extra point. You know, a kick, a field goal kick is where I think it's really important, because it's like the timing on that is very close to, I mean, that ball better zip back there.
I mean, I assume they'd, like, if it were the Seahawks, I'd assume they'd have to go to Ethan Posick, right?
Yeah.
So I wonder how different that snap is, the distance and getting the steam on it versus just a shotgun snap.
Right.
I don't know. That'd be really weird. I'm curious to see how this works out, if that becomes a problem, or maybe they've got them working on it right now.
Sure. Who knows?
But they can't practice. So that's the other part of it.
Send them and get them on a Zoom call and tell them to go in their backyard and snap it to their wife.
Or just start firing them into the wall or something.
Yeah.
What else did we learn, Maura?
Well, the do trap games exist question was posed to Ben Burkervin. I'm not sure Jim got the answer he wanted.
Yeah, but don't you think, Ben, when you were back in college, if you were playing Portland State the week that you were before you were playing the Apple Cup against the Cougs, that it might be a letdown spot there, that Portland State game?
I mean, Portland State probably gave us more trouble than the Cougs ever did, so probably not.
Oh, you're not letting me down, Ben.
You just teed him up there, Jim.
Yeah.
You just laid that out there for him, big meatball down the middle of the plate, and he just crushed it.
Yeah, he did. He always talked about how predictable the Cougar offense was under Mike Leach, and it always kind of blew me away because he's, as far as the games against the Huskies, he was right. They just completely shut the Cougar offense down, and yet against every other team, we'd just go up and down the field. So, yeah, I don't get what they were doing that everybody else couldn't figure out.
It's kind of hard to argue with those results. I mean, in all seriousness, the way they did sort of control that offense is pretty impressive, but he made it sound like it was so simplistic. Like, yeah, they only ran three or four plays or whatever he said. He made it sound like it was a very simple offense to scheme against.
You see what I mean? LSU couldn't do anything with Mississippi State on Saturday.
Well, that's because the SEC had never seen that before. Ed Orgeron didn't know what to do against that offense.
I enjoyed watching that game. That was fun to watch. I mean, what's LSU ranked? Sixth?
They were sixth. Yeah. I don't know where they're at now, but yeah, they were sixth. What else did we learn, Maura?
Well, I don't have audio of this one, but we also learned in that conversation that Dave thinks it's unfair that he answered his favorite Netflix shows, but he hates the question, what's your favorite movie?
That was unfair.
Do you think if you were in the conversation, you would have tried to push him further, like needle him towards his favorite movie of all time?
I would have seen what kind of mood he was in, you know, maybe.
He was in a hurry-up mood.
Hurry-up, yeah.
He speaks so rapidly.
I know. He does. He's a fast talker.
It's hard to tell if that's just how he speaks all the time. It almost sounds like, all right, I'm going to answer these really quick because I want to get out of here. What do you got?
Yeah, I don't think he ever has a, I don't know. I mean, maybe. I'm not really sure about that.
I mean, I'm wrong a lot, so who knows? But here's what I think.
Yeah, he's, he spits out the syllables, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He's rapid fire, I tell you what. We learn anything else, Maura?
We learned that Jim was not a fan of my tease at 3:30 today.
According to the show sheet, Jim, it says Jim sent show notes today that made it sound like he might be joining the cooking people, at least for this week. Not my words, but what's behind this?
Those weren't my words either.
Are you a cooking person?
I think Maura's jumping to conclusions here.
I like when I was reading it going to break, Jim's interjecting, no, I don't think that.
Like a little kid. I did not.
I'm not a fan of the cooking people, I admit it.
Yeah, that's the last thing you want is to be lumped in with the cooking people, right?
I mean, I do like Jake Heaps, and he can be the president of that club, but I don't want to join.
What are you going to write at the end of the year, Jim, if they've cooked the entire year? Russell has cooked, and
he's got 53 touchdown passes.
Yeah. I don't know. They go to the playoffs, and I don't know if they win the Super Bowl, but what's going to be the article about the cooking people at the end of the year, if they're right?
It'd be a headline, I was wrong about you cooking people.
There we go.
He's got it planned
out. But I still don't like you.
I still don't want to be associated with you. Right.
You're smarter than the coaches.
By the way, did you find your article from high school?
I haven't looked yet.
Okay. Oh, come on. Get on that.
Okay.
We got to get that clipping from the Daily Mustang. Okay.
I'm surprised we haven't had a listener send it to us.
Yeah. But, Dave, I'll have to go up in the attic, and that involves a ladder.
Watch out for those ladders, Jim.
Yep.
I'm telling you.
Get the kids to hold it at the bottom. Hold it steady for you.
Jim, I was telling, we were talking about the story about the cobwebs. Mm-hmm. Oh, when you were asked to clean up the cobwebs on the ceiling, and your response was to your wife, don't look up.
Yeah. Yeah, that still holds true to today.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. You got cobwebs up there?
Oh, man, the spiders are out everywhere.
Oh, my gosh. This is a year for spiders today.
I got a lot in my house.
I was in the backyard. I walked into, like, three different webs. And then the web goes around you, and you're like, where's the spider?
Yeah. Do you have them in your house?
No.
I've got spiders in the house. And I've got those have you guys seen those plug-ins that are supposed to emit some sort of sound that kills insects or something? So I've got those all over the place.
Yeah.
They don't work.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
There's spiders in there every day.
Good old spider spray. You know, the spiders are good and everything, but they were killing honeybees in my backyard.
Oh.
Yeah, they were catching the honeybees, so I'm like, okay, that's no good. We don't have enough honeybees.
I've tried to get them out, like scoop them up with paper and like throw them out the front door, but that doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
Like, I was I was out on our deck yesterday just kind of marveling at a spider web and how cool it looked. And today I inadvertently walked through one, and I felt bad, and I literally said sorry to the spider.
Sorry to the spider.
For disrupting his home.
Jim, I'm sorry.
Because I saw him, you know, because all of a sudden his web kind of came tumbling down, and I saw him scurrying, and I just went, sorry.
All that work he put in on it for naught.
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean to.
What would you have done if the spider had said, watch where you're going, you big idiot? Would you have smashed it? Or
Yeah, I would have gone looking for a broom.
Jim would have said, I'm going to stop drinking. This is not good. I'm hallucinating. Did we learn anything else, Maura?
No, that's about it.
I think that's enough.
That's enough learning. All right. I want to thank our guests, John Clayton, John Morosi, and Ben Burkervin for joining us on the program. If you missed any of today's show, just head to 710sports.com, click the podcast button, and then click on our picture. It'll be right there waiting for you. We're back tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.